Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with some doctors about the controversy surrounding a newly approved drug aimed at treating Alzheimer's.
There are questions about the effectiveness of that drug, and Alzheimer's has proved to be a difficult disease to treat, but there are some things we can do that can help prevent it.
Some recent studies say that deep sleep, the kind when dreams are rare and your body temperature drops, can help protect us from Alzheimer's disease.
Researchers have known for a long time that poor sleep can lead to long-term problems with memory and thinking. Now they're starting to connect the dots between sleep and dementia, especially Alzheimer's.
Sleep is just one piece of the puzzle. Our next guest says there are many health behaviors that can lower our risk of developing Alzheimer's.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. How concerned are you about getting Alzheimer's? Does it run in your family? What kind of activities do you do to keep your mind engaged? What questions do you have about Alzheimer's prevention? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
Dr. Nathaniel Chin is a geriatrician and the medical director of the Alzheimer's Disease Research Program at UW-Madison. He's the host of the Dementia Matters podcast, and he's an assistant professor of medicine, geriatrics, and gerontology in UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Chin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get to prevention, can we talk about why prevention is so important? Alzheimer's seems like a really difficult disease to actually treat.
And that's one of the reasons why I think prevention is so key. We are having a very difficult time, not only in understanding Alzheimer's disease and cognitive decline, but then in having therapeutics and treatments to stabilize or reverse cognitive decline.
With prevention, as I understand it, there's not one magic thing we can do. But that said, before we get into specific prevention elements, how much can we do to lower our risk of Alzheimer's? How big a difference can we make?
I think it's quite significant. There are a lot of studies out that show that 35% of cases of dementia, which isn't specific to Alzheimer's, but is what we see in people, 35% of those are potentially modifiable. And so that's a huge area for us to have an empowering impact on.
Are some people more at risk of developing Alzheimer's or even other forms of dementia than others?
Yes, certainly people can have a genetic risk factor that isn't going to determine that you have Alzheimer's disease, but would increase your risk. And certainly things that happen early in your life that you may not have control over can increase your risk for future cognitive change.
All right, well, let's dig a little bit into what we can do. I just referenced some research on sleep, for example. How big a difference can sleep be in our risk of dementia?
I'm glad you referenced that one in particular, because I think that's an underappreciated lifestyle habit. We often live in a culture where you're proud to not get much sleep and tough it out. But the reality is most of us need 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and it is really important for us. We can feel the effects of not having proper sleep. And so it is not only a risk factor in the development of the proteins of Alzheimer's disease, as well as future cognitive decline. But science is starting to show that it's a possible mechanism for how we build up these abnormal proteins of Alzheimer's when we don't get enough sleep or a deep enough sleep.
We've had conversations on this show with sleep specialists on how we can boost our chances of sleep. It's not an easy thing. It's not as easy in some ways as, you know, eating more veggies or something like that that we'll get into. How important, if we've got problematic sleep, is it for us to seek out help in solving our sleep problems?
I think it's worth stopping what you're doing and reaching out, first through your primary care provider, or even just through the internet and searching for sleep hygiene techniques. And a lot of our sleep issues are behaviors that we have and routines that we have during the day that lead to a difficult time sleeping. Not all of them, but a lot of times we can improve our own sleep just with some helpful techniques.
Talking to Dr. Nathaniel Chin with the Alzheimer's Disease Research Program at UW-Madison, talking about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia and choices we can make, things we can do in our lives to help lower the risk. Not one magical solution, but some things that can tip the odds in our favor. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions about Alzheimer's, about prevention in particular, if you have changed your life in some way with some of these things in mind. 800-642-1234. 1234 is the number to call. Dr. Chen, how about diet and exercise? We hear about these as things we can do to influence a lot of our health outcomes. How does it fit into Alzheimer's?
Those are the other two really critical ones. So exercise is pretty incredible what it can do, not only for our heart, but our brains. When you exercise, aerobically in particular, you actually can alter the genes that are being activated or inactivated in our body. And in particular, you can increase the production of a protein in your brain called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. That protein helps you grow more brain cells or keep your brain cells healthy, as well as the connections between brain cells. And so, but it's also just about blood flow, improvement to your mood, improvement to your musculoskeletal system. The exercise alone has a huge impact on how our heart and our brain function.
Now, the good news there is, A, there's not a lot of downside to getting more exercise and eating better. And even if it's only a small effect on Alzheimer's, we know it has a lot of benefits for cardiovascular health, stroke prevention, that kind of thing. So there's nothing wrong with doing those things.
There's no downside other than you might feel tired afterwards or you could have some sore joints. But in truth, it's only the upside. And you don't have to do a lot of it. Even 10 minutes to start out is something that is quite meaningful for your wellness, but also for your brain.
And on the diet side of things, what are some really simple things that we can try to work into our daily or at least weekly food routines?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about diet. Diet is one of the hardest ones, but yet one of the most important lifestyle changes that we can make. The MIND diet, which is MIND, is a specific type of diet created at Rush University, as our colleagues in Illinois. And it really does focus on Mediterranean, heart-healthy, low-salt, but also things like blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, things that have antioxidants in them. To answer your question, dark green leafy vegetables are really key. The berries are really key, and healthy fats are really key.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Black River. John, hi.
Hey, I just had a question. I thought I'd listened to another podcast where they had talked about a compound called rapamycin. And I was just wondering what the effect that has on prevention, taking it before you'd be diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
John, thanks for the call. That's a medication, I think, Dr. Chin, that there have been studies on that anyway. What do we know?
So that's an excellent question. That's actually at the heart of a lot of aging and longevity research. So rapamycin is a medication that people use for specific medical conditions. It's also used in scientific studies in looking to see if we can lengthen a person's, not only their chronological age, but just the health of a person. As a geriatrician, of course, I'm always very conscientious of medications, of side effects. And so it isn't something where we're ready to start recommending to people that you take this as a preventative. But certainly it helps us explain mechanisms of why some people might be aging slower, or they might be living a more active life throughout their life compared to other people. So it's a very hot area of research. And I do think there's something to it. So I think there's more to come. And our own scientists here at UW are looking at this as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, John. We'll go to Olivia now in Eau Claire. Olivia, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Olivia?
So I know you guys were just talking about the effects of sleep on dementia and Alzheimer's, and I was just wondering if prolonged overnight shift working has, a prevalence in an increase in dementia.
Oh, interesting, Olivia. Thanks for that question. Dr. Chin, do we know?
Olivia, I love the question. I myself do night shifts at the hospital, and so I've been asking that question as well. There isn't a lot of studies looking at night shift workers or persistent or many nights in a row of sleep and how that affects cognition. There is some evidence that a disrupted night of sleep, just one, can lead to cognitive changes just for the next day or the day after that. We don't know that that's permanent. We certainly can feel that when we have a bad night's sleep, or for people who do shift work, they can feel off the next day or the few days before they recover. And so I think that's an area that needs more understanding. And it really does highlight the circadian rhythm and this idea of deep sleep, which is sometimes harder when you're trying to go to bed at 8 a.m.
We're talking about preventing Alzheimer's right now. Last month, we had a couple of doctors on to talk about the controversy surrounding the FDA's approval of a new drug for the disease. Today, we're focusing on what we can do to lower our risk of developing it.
Dr. Nathaniel Chin stays with us. He's a geriatrician and medical director of the Alzheimer's Disease Research Program at UW-Madison, also the host of the Dementia Matters podcast.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you do to keep your mind sharp, or if you have any questions about keeping Alzheimer's at bay, that's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org.
And let's go back to our callers now. Philip is with us in Monroe. Philip, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell?
My wife and I are both part of the core study group and the ADRC UW. I've been part of Connecto and couple of the other projects that have had all the scans. So I'm going out to Stanford University. I'm on route now to participate in a study with electromagnetic pulse for treatment of mild cognitive impairment. And my question to the doctor is, has he heard of this? And what's he think?
Philip, thanks for the call. He's going to Stanford University for, he said, electromagnetic pulse therapy. Are you familiar with this, Dr. Chin?
I have heard of it. And of course, coming out of Stanford, you know that it's gone through the proper channels to get to the point where we can start studying that on human beings. And so I trust that they're following the right protocols. I don't know a ton about the underlying mechanism for how they think that's helpful. But there is some small studies, particularly in animals, where they show that that is a way of somehow eliminating that first protein in particular of Alzheimer's disease called amyloid. And so I think what, you know, what your caller is suggesting, though, is that we really have to be open to multiple different ways of addressing the pathology, the changes of Alzheimer's disease in the brain, and coming up with these very creative ways like this is something that, in addition to potentially a medication, could be needed down the road. So I appreciate the participation in our center, as well as the one over in Stanford.
Philip, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck with that treatment. Dr. Chin, getting back to some of the things we know about prevention, I always hear, you know, intellectual activity, keeping your brain working and stimulated. How effective is that for prevention? And what kind of things are we talking about here?
It does seem to be effective at reducing risk. And our center, as well as many of our colleagues across the country, do have lots of what we call association studies. So we're not trying to prove that A causes B, but we see a relationship between people who engage in stimulating activities. That could be card games, playing music, reading, writing, artwork. And then later on in our studies, showing that they tend to have slower decline or improved memory on some tests, or just a lower risk of developing dementia. And so it's certainly a reasonable and hopefully a fun way of not only keeping active, but then doing something good for the future version of yourself.
As you mentioned, we don't know about the causality here. How do we sort out whether the activity itself prevents development of dementia versus the sort of people who engage in those activities are for some reason less prone to dementia?
That's one of the million-dollar questions. And it's really difficult to do that, not only because the study itself would be quite intense, mm-hmm. but it's also, it would take a long time in observing people for one intervention for a long period of time. And so I think it really speaks to likely there are multiple things happening. When we engage our brains, oftentimes we're doing it with other people. So there's a social aspect. So that might make us feel better and improve our mood and reduce our stress. So there's probably other components to it. But as you mentioned before with the exercise, there's really no harm in these things. And so it's, you know, even if we can't definitively prove that one causes the other, we know there's that relationship and it is good for people and people enjoy it. And so really, we would still encourage people to do it.
Well, you just teased a couple more of your six main pillars of prevention, socialization being one of them, a good social connections. What do we know about that?
we know that people who we one, we know that we're social creatures and that we are meant for most of us, not everyone is, but for the majority of people that we're meant to engage with others. And so we have plenty of these association studies where people who are actively engaged, whether it's adult activity centers or they volunteer or they're in social networks, those people that tend to report those activities also tend to perform better on testing and have slower changes over time when they're followed in a research institute.
That socialization, you mentioned another S word a few moments ago, stress. What's the role of stress in Alzheimer's?
Stress has more of a biochemical relationship. So when stress isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when you have too long of stress, persistent stress without any clear ending, it really does raise our cortisol level. And cortisol and adrenaline, those are our fight and flight hormones. Too much cortisol actually leads to disruption in our blood vessel, wall strength, our metabolic system, too much blood sugar. And all of those things then can actually lead to changes in our brain, or at least have a relationship to brain changes. So stress is a very real negative effect, not only on our heart, but then really on our brain.
Now, this makes me think of what I hear about adverse childhood experiences, where, you know, kids might be experiencing a lot of stress or other problems early in life. Maybe those same kids don't have great access to healthy food or reliable sleep. Are there social interventions we could be doing to tackle some of these factors early in life for people?
Absolutely. And I think that part of the one of the main aspects of Alzheimer's disease research is really social determinants of health, because we know that things that happen to you throughout your life course do end up playing a role in how your brain performs later on. And so being able, I would argue this is a public policy issue now. This is, we need to be able to provide more and do better for our communities earlier in life and in the middle of their life, so that later on when you retire, you are not one that has to face the consequences of dementia.
We're talking about Alzheimer's prevention with Dr. Nathaniel Chin from UW-Madison's Alzheimer's Disease Research Program. Let's go back to our callers now. Susan is with us in Madison. Susan, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Okay, this might be a duplicate question because I'm asking about brainwave entrainment or neurofeedback. Is that helpful in reducing Alzheimer's?
So that's a very interesting question. And so brain training is something that is being done as sort of a treatment and a way of helping people. It may not necessarily relate directly to the proteins of Alzheimer's disease or the brain cells dying, but it is a way for our brains to compensate, to find strategies to rewire around an issue and be able to perform well. In the end, it isn't the brain change that's so bothersome to us, it's the symptoms that we experience. And so if we have ways and mechanisms that our brains can perform despite those changes, we wouldn't worry so much about Alzheimer's disease.
Susan, thanks a lot for the question. Dr. Chin, I wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about your podcast, Dementia Matters, an opportunity for people to learn a lot more, I think, about Alzheimer's. What kind of things are you doing there?
Well, so it's meant to be for the general public, for the community, and the focus has been to translate some of the key research findings happening here at UW, but all across the world, really, by meeting with the researchers themselves, asking them questions, and helping them explain to the public what it is that we're doing within this research world. What are the findings? Why does this matter to us? You know, why are things taking either fast or slow as far as those results? The other aspect is really about caregivers and being able to provide information to people who are caring for a loved one living with dementia or cognitive change, or for the individual who's living with those changes.
I know there are a lot of paths to trying to tackle issues related to Alzheimer's, Dr. Chin. Is there something you're looking at that you feel the most optimistic about on the horizon?
I really do think with our advancement in identifying the changes of Alzheimer's disease, so these are when people talk about PET scans and these blood tests, our ability to identify people earlier and earlier in the disease is going to afford us the opportunity for earlier interventions and change. So along with prevention, along with these lifestyle habits, if we are going to have therapies, having those as early as possible, I do believe will lead to more meaningful outcomes. And our center here at UW is one of the cutting edge ones in identifying those changes in healthy people, but also in people who are experiencing symptoms.
And Dr. Chin, can you leave with some encouragement to tackle some of these lifestyle behaviors that can help reduce the risk of Alzheimer's?
I would recommend for people, pick one thing to start with. This is not going to be a sprint. This is a marathon, and you have to take it slowly. I don't want people getting injured. So pick one activity that is meaningful to you that you think you can start doing, and go with that. And as you get confident with that, then you can start taking on some of these other health habits. But certainly, exercise and sleep are ones that are going to have a benefit to you, regardless of your thinking ability, that you're going to notice on a day-to-day level.
Dr. Chin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Nathaniel Chin is a geriatrician and the medical director of the Alzheimer's Disease Research Program at UW-Madison. He's also host of the Dementia Matters podcast. We talked to him today about what we can do to lower our risk of getting Alzheimer's.
Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show, Monday at 7:30. State Capitol reporter Laurel White tells us what's in the budget passed by lawmakers and what happens now that it's in the hands of Governor Evers. That's Monday at 7:30 on The Morning Show.
Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then a political reporter shares the key takeaways from President Biden's visit to La Crosse earlier this week. Remember, you can follow all these conversations and go into our archives as well by downloading the WPR app onto your phone or listen online at WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. You're listening to Central Time.